नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयत् नस्तु प्रेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भगवत सेवाया भगवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्ति भवति नैष्ठिकी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, reading today from chapter 30 of the fourth canto, text number 1. This chapter is called The Activities of the Prachetas. Piduruvacha ye tvaya abhihita praman sutaha prachina bahishaha te rudra gitena Harim Siddhim Apuhu Pratoshya Kam Vidura Uvacha Ye Tvaya Bihita Brahman Sutak Prachi Nabahishaha Te Rudra Gitena Harim Siddhim Apu Pratoshnakam Pratoshnakam Vidurvacha Vidura said, Yea, those who Twaya by you Abhihitaha were spoken about. Brahman, O Brahmana, Sutaha, sons, Prachina Bahishaha, of King Prachina Bahi, Te, all of them, Urudragitena, by the song composed by Lord Shiva, Harim, the Lord, Siddhim, success, Apuhu, achieved, Pratoshya, having satisfied, Kam, what? Translation, Vidura inquired from Maitreya, O Brahmana, you formerly spoke about the sons of Prachina Bharhi, and informed me that they satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting a song composed by Lord Shiva. What did they achieve in this way? Please repeat. Vidura inquired from Maitreya. O Brahmana, you formerly spoke about the sons of Prachina Bharhi, and informed me that they satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting a song composed by Lord Shiva. What did they achieve in this way? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. In the beginning, Maitreya Rishi narrated the activities of the sons of Prachinabarhi. These sons went beside a great lake, which was like an ocean, and fortunately finding Lord Shiva, they learned how to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting the songs composed by Lord Shiva. Now their father's attachment for fruitive activities was disapproved by Narada, who therefore kindly instructed Prachinabarhi by telling him the allegorical story of Paranjan. Now Vidura wanted to hear about Prachinabarhi's sons, and he was especially inquisitive to know what they achieved by satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here the words siddhim apuhu, or achieved perfection, are very important. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 7 verse 3, manushanam sahasreshu kastidyatiti siddhaye. Out of many, many millions of people, one may be interested in learning how to attain success in spiritual matters. The supreme success is mentioned also in Bhagavad Gita chapter 8 verse 15. Chapter 8 verse 15, what is it? Anyone remember what 8:15 is? Anyone got an inkling? It's okay. You probably know it, I'm sure. No. Sorry, I'm just testing. I probably don't know myself. I just got the book in front of me. Mamupecha panajanma dukalayam mashashvatam napnuvanti mahatmana songsidim paramam gataha. Thank you. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. And what is that highest perfection? That is also explained in that very verse. The highest perfection is to return home back to Godhead, so that one will not have to return to this material world and transmigrate from one body to another in the dream of material existence. By the grace of Lord Shiva, the Prachetas actually attained perfection and returned home back to Godhead after enjoying material facilities to the highest extent. Maitreya will now narrate that to Vidura. Vidura vacha, ye tvaya vihitas brahman sutak prachinabahishaha te rudra gitena harim siddhimapu pratoshnakam. Vidura inquired from Maitreya, O Brahman, you formerly spoke about the sons of Prachinabarhi and informed me that they satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting a song composed by Lord Shiva. What did they achieve in that way? Omagyana Timarandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshuru Militang Jaina Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpaturubhistara Kripa Sundabhya Vichara Patitanam Pavanibhu Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasti Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hari Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Prachetas, we're beginning a new chapter, by the way, you can see. The other chapter was a long one, so we're beginning a new chapter. So the Prachetas, they performed great austerities. I think they were meditating, tell me if I'm wrong, at the bottom of the ocean. That requires some restraint of the mind, not least because it requires some restraint of the breath. According to yogic principles, the breathing and the mind are closely connected. Therefore, when those who are trying to focus the mind are often advised to slow down the breathing, because by slowing down the breath, the mind tends to become controlled. Even in Hari Bhakti Palas, even though we sometimes are a little critical of Ashtanga Yoga, in Hari Bhakti Palas there are some recommendations for doing some breathing exercises and so on and so forth, because we know that physical posture, the breathing and so on, they do have quite an impact on the mind. It was a long, how long were the sons of Prachinabari in the ocean? I didn't have time to actually research this morning. So how long were they in the ocean? I think they were probably, 10,000, 20,000, it's something like that. It was a long time. It wasn't just a couple of hours chanting Hare Krishna. Point being that this was a long endeavor. They put a lot of effort into this and a lot of time. So the question is very significant or natural. I mean, why did they do it? What did they achieve? What was the benefit of that? And Srila Prabhupada does quote this famous but not that well known verse from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verse 15. Which we tend to quote quite a lot. It's one of those verses that has entered into our colloquial language, where we tend to, if we're asked how things are going, we tend to say, Dukale amashashvatam. Of course, devotees have another expression. If they're not having such a good time, they tend to say, purifying, Prabhu, purifying. It's one way of turning it round. But this is significant because in one sense the whole problem of material existence and the solution to those problems are summarized in a nutshell. The problems being two, dukkha, alayam, Shashvatam. Alayam means place. When I was in New Zealand, we were given kindly by the devotees a residence there, and it was surrounded by ducks. You know ducks? Quack, quack, quack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I called the place Dukalayam, the place of ducks. That's what it means, the place, but here it means the place of suffering, alayam. Anishashvatam, it's temporary. These are really the great problems here. And the solution is given, mamupecha, when you achieve me, then everything is solved. However, there is a challenge, and that is, until we get to that mamupecha, Srila Prabhupada describes as going back to Godhead here, what do we do? How do we deal with those whips and scorns? What is it Shakespeare calls it? Yeah, let me see if I've got it. Yeah, this is very relevant because I was asking today whether or not I was on the last verse, which was to be. So my question was, is the verse to be or not to be? But he very much talks of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. He mentions some of them, of course. The oppressor's wrong, the proud man, the pangs of unrequited love, I'm translating this here, the law's delay, anyone's ever been in legal problems, the insolence of office, when you meet someone who's got an official position. Do you get that here in Belgium, the insolence of office? Very bureaucratic. You go approach someone for help. Anyway, there are so many problems in this world, aren't there? You run out of toothpaste, your dhoti won't go on properly. The thing falls off your bundi. It's all those. I mean, just to recount some things that happened to me recently, isn't it? There, just one thing after another. We're all aware of these little sufferings. What to speak of the big sufferings, Janmir, Michu, Jirav, Yadi, the big ones. So the question is really, even though we have this solution, long-term solution, what do we do as devotees when we're faced with those sufferings? And they come to us all. How do we actually deal with them? Of course, one of the solutions is the English word is forbearance. It's a nice word, forbearance. We often use the word tolerate, but forbearance is also an interesting word. We have to forbear those. But at the same time, how do we do that? That's the question. What are we going to do when those whips and scorns of outrageous fortune come, when actually we're faced with difficulty? Shakespeare also said, and it's interesting in relation to this verse, because it's very easy when someone actually tells us of some of their sorrows, dukalayam ashashvatam, or prabhu, a little bit of matraspashas would be in order. So Shakespeare said any problem or any suffering is easy to bear, except our own. So it's easy to have the solution for others, but what happens when suffering comes our way? Then it becomes a little, according to Shakespeare, it becomes a little more difficult. What are some of the strategies we have, the techniques we have, what are some of the skills we learn to overcome that suffering? Of course, what is really not recommended is lamentation. Pragyavad, what is it, the beginning? What is chapter 2, verse 11? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Ashochana vashochastvam pragyavadangs tubasase gatasun agatasuns cha nanu shochanti panditaha. Thank you. He says, pragyavadangs, you're speaking learned words. And Arjuna was giving many good examples, quoting Shastra and other authorities. Even in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there are some interesting arguments. There's some wisdom there given by Arjuna, showing his learning and his, not only his learning, but also his consideration, his compassion. But still, Krishna said, Nanu shochanti panditaha. One who's learned, one who's actually a pandit, doesn't lament. So this is an important quality of one who's learned. And this ability to give up lamentation, despair, hopelessness, is an important feature of spiritual life, because we're all going to face it at some stage, most likely, unless we're above that. Most of us will find sometimes we feel some kind of anguish in spiritual life. Or am I wrong? Are we all above that? Even those who are pure devotees, they went through this anguish. Of course, it's easy to say, in ISKCON we have a way of dealing with it, that's just lila. But no, they also went through those experiences. Anguish, lamentation. It's considered a quality of the Shudra class, generally speaking. Those higher varnas, it should be above that lamentation. But it's something we have to deal with. Shakespeare gives a nice example. He likens life to an ocean. I think here even, he actually, what does he say? Or to take arms against a sea of troubles. A sea, he likens life to a sea of troubles, an ocean of troubles. This analogy is apt because it is also one used by our own tradition, that the ocean of material existence, and it's a much used metaphor in the Vedic tradition. Even the idea of Tirtha, pilgrimage place, when we learn about, some of us are studying Hinduism from Gopinath Acharya Prabhu, we heard the word Tirtha. What does it mean, Tirtha? It means pilgrimage place. But what's the literal meaning? Tirtha, what's the meaning? I'm not asking you. I know you know. It means ford. Not a motor car. Ford. What's a ford? What is a ford? Because English isn't always our first language. What is a ford? A fortress. A fortress? No. That's a fort. Ford. F-O-R-D. A ford. As in Oxford. Huh? Yes. It's the shallow part of Oxford. Why Oxford? Because they used to take their cows across the river, apparently. There are some shallow places further up, aren't there, if you go north. At other places it's very deep and slow. Those who are in Oxford will know. So they used to actually take their oxen across the river because it was shallow at that. There weren't so many bridges. So, you know, in that, prior to there being, you know, modern times when there are long bridges, they used to rely on ferries or fords. So a ford means a place you cross the river. So the analogy is used. Tirtha, it is the place you can get across the ocean of material suffering to the far shore. Very significant metaphor. So Shakespeare uses a marine example, one connected to the ocean, and he says that actually you're the captain of a ship. You've lost half your sailors. The mast is broken. The cable, I don't see what he means by the cable. The cable is snapped and you've lost your anchor. He gives four things. I won't read the English, the old English, because I don't have it. But he gives those four examples. You've lost half your sailors. That means, what does that mean in life? Yeah, you're losing some of your companions or your friends. Your sail is broken. That means you've got no power. So your mast is broken. That means you've got no power. You can't move. Because with ships, then the sail provides the power. You've lost your I'm not sure what he means by cable, but you've got no anchor. Anchor is... Maybe it's the same thing. Yeah, maybe he means that cable. I'm not sure. But he mentions the anchor and the cable. I'm not sure whether he means the same one or another. But the anchor is there, and of course the anchor is a symbol of security. You go to a port and you drop anchor. You have some relief, you're in a haven, some freedom. So all those things, they're symbolic, those things. But what does he say? What is the captain doing? He's crying. And how does he describe that crying? He says, your tears, which are also salty. You know, when we cry, we sometimes taste the salt. What are they doing? They're helping increase the size of the ocean. Which is the cause of your problem anyway. And as you're filling the ocean with your tears, what happens? You hit the rocks. Which needn't have happened, he says. While you're lamenting, instead of getting on with things, you hit the rocks. What a very powerful example. And that verse is quoted, I read it anyway, as a quote, in favor of forbearance, the need to actually not be overcome with lamentation, but to actually get on with our devotional service in life despite all the tribulations that come. And there are many examples in our Shastra of those who've done that and who've dealt with this suffering, those things that happen to us, those events which we deem to be negative rather than positive. I'm thinking of Vidura also. It's interesting how he was at one time really insulted by Duryodhan. Of course, to be insulted usually hurts when we're attached to, particularly if we're attached to reputation, but particularly if it comes from someone who's a family member, then it really hurts, doesn't it? If someone we think is close to us and they insult us, and the story is given of Daksha, you were discussing this, was it you who was discussing it? Someone was telling me they were discussing this Leela, maybe it wasn't you. You will later on. Okay, sorry. Gopinathacharya will be discussing this Leela of how the tension between Daksha and who was the tension? Was it Lord Shiva? And Lord Shiva, yes, it was. Yeah. And the whole problem was that actually Sati went to some occasion, and in front of everyone, Daksha insulted her husband. Daksha's a Brahmin. Brahmins are always a little more concerned with the world, with family, with tradition, with respectability. And Daksha's daughter was marrying this crazy ascetic who would be not dressed very well, as ascetics tend to be. Sometimes in ISKCON our ascetics are like that also. Sometimes they're well dressed. But there's a tendency. So right in front of everyone, in front of the whole assembly, Daksha criticized Lord Shiva, who was his own son-in-law, and Sati was there. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport in the Bhagavatam that actually the words, when they're spoken by someone close to us, they just rage in the heart day and night. So when Duryodhan was insulted Vidura, I think calling him the son of a maidservant, he was referring to his birth. Mm-hmm. Because we know that actually Vidura was born of the son of a maidservant, because one of the two queens, Amba or Ambalika, I can't remember which, had replaced herself with a maidservant just before having liaison with Vyasadeva. We know the story. So he actually insulted him because of his birth. But actually it's mentioned there that even though the words pierced his heart, Vidura saw this as the will of providence. This is Krishna's arrangement. And therefore he left on pilgrimage. So sometimes when something unforetold happens to us, we can ask ourselves, what is the will of the Lord here? And sometimes that suffering is a kick to send us in another direction. I had personal experience in 1989, I think it was. I had a very ambitious project to convert a fire engine into a motorhome for the sake of Sankirtan, or at least that was my excuse. looking back, I had some desire to own a motorhome. At one point I'd got one of these magazines with all these big motorhomes, and yeah, wow, these are good. So there was definitely a personal desire there. So at one stage I tried to convert this fire engine. It's a long story, I won't go into it now. But the end of the story was that actually it didn't work. We put in all this wood inside the motorhome, and then we found it was leaking on the outside still. And there are so many stories. It was one of those projects that required perseverance, as we're discussing here, perseverance. But it didn't work. And shortly afterwards, I met my godbrother, Tribhuvanath, who's passed away some years ago now. And he bought this wonderful machine from me. For very little. So I ended up with no service, and I'd put, I think, 18 months of my time into that. I think I'd collected about £14,000 over that time, and I lost it just like that. I came to that realization, this project is not going to work. So I was a little depressed for a few days. But then I met Tribhuvanath, and he told me, Rasamana, you're a bit of an egghead. You should do some preaching to the intellectuals. So I took his advice, and I did a mail out to some universities. We had some limited success, but then later on I did a similar mail out to schools. And this is probably an example of Krishna. It wasn't anything to do with me. Somehow or other, I was just in the right place at the right time, as we say. We sent out, I think, we printed 3,000 brochures, we mailed them out, and we got a 10.6% response rate. We had over 200, about 270 schools reply. And then somehow or other, I started the schools program. Of course, I mean, I couldn't do anything, I had 270 replies. I had to respond. And the program took off very quickly. Simply providence, a destiny, Krishna's mercy. But then I thought afterwards, wow, if that hadn't have happened, I would probably still be doing Namahat preaching in the southwest of the UK. And then from that, I got into education, for which, and I'm here, for which I'm grateful. So we can see actually Krishna has a plan, and that is one way of actually dealing with those sufferings that come our way, to actually think, what is Krishna's plan through all of this? Mm-hmm. Why? And to have that trust that somehow or other, Suridam Sava Bhutanam, Krishna, destiny is Krishna, Kalohang. That is Krishna. We should not resent being under the influence of time and destiny, Srila Prabhupada writes. It is Krishna. So we should somehow try and understand, what does Krishna want from me in this situation? How do I respond to this? So there has to be some forbearance. Perhaps there are other ways also we deal with the natural suffering that comes in the course of our lives and devotional service. It would be interesting to hear from you some of your strategies for dealing with it also. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's interesting that Bhaktivedanta Thakur in Jayavadharma explains that a pure devotee may feel some suffering, such, and he gives the example, if you lose a son, but he gets some relief by remembering the Supreme Lord. So it's not that we're like some kind of robots and we become like rocks. What was that song from the 1960s? I'm showing my ears. I am a rock, I am an island. If I never would have loved, I never would have cried. Shunyavad. We become afraid of becoming people. Why? Because we've had such bad experience. Then it's better not to love. I will become a rock. I will become an island. or I will merge with the impersonal Brahman. Basically, we don't want that personhood. Why? Because it actually, we've had bad experience. Just like we have bad experience of authority, don't we? Generally in Kali Yuga, there is so much bad experience of authority. Of course, authority represents Krishna. I am the monarch. Krishna is the authority. There is no doubt. Despite everyone wanting a level playing field, the problem is for them that Krishna is still God. Death will come and take everything away, despite your appeals for everything being fair and social justice and my rights. What rights do you have? Actually, we have very little in a way. Fortunately, Krishna is our friend, Suridam Sava Bhutanam. So how do we deal with that suffering? Forbearance. What was I saying? I've lost my train of thought here. Yes, yes, so we give that up. Yeah, yeah. But that's not the process. It doesn't work. Never, you can't renounce this world. We tend to renounce. We become philosophers. We become jnanis. We reject the world. Therefore, Shakespeare likens, he calls philosophy the fruit of suffering. I forget his, do you know his exact word? But he has a very nice phrase. Something like, suffering's fruit, philosophy. we try to get consolation through philosophy. But then we reject the world, we renounce it. But Gopinathacharya was telling me the story of one Western person who became an Advaita. It was such a funny story. And how he was actually renounced the world, but he became a sannyasi. And of course, sannyasis, they think by sannyas you become perfect. And of course, Krishna rejects that. You don't become perfect in the third chapter. You don't become perfect simply by renouncing the world. But Gopinathacharya explained how this gentleman was actually, and he was explaining the ceremony where they become civilly dead. And it's actually based on the kind of cremation ceremony, am I right? The sannyas ceremony for the Advaitins is based on the cremation ceremony. I mean, they take this serially, that you're civilly dead. But as we discussed, I was noting, well, there's a bit of an ambiguity here, because the sannyasi is civilly dead, he's outside of society, but hold on a minute, he's part of the four varnas. Therefore, he's a part of society. And then we were discussing how this sannyasi, he was... rather than being able to preach Mayavad philosophy to all the grihasthas he blessed and visited, they were more interested in solving some of their social problems. And in the end, he started carrying medicine around with him. Why medicine? If you're a Mayavadi, why are you carrying medicine if everything is one? But the point is, we can't live that philosophy. We can't renounce. It's not possible. There must be some transfer of that affection to someone. Otherwise, the problem is our affection is very... this is one of the greatest challenges, is we lose those who are close to us. That bereavement is very hard to deal with, actually. I was reading in the Mahabharata how Arjuna went to the heavenly planets for a few years. And the Pandavas were just horrified at the thought of losing Arjuna. So even for great souls it may happen. But somehow or other we take shelter of Krishna. These are some of the ways we can try and overcome some of the natural difficulties that come in this world. By remembering Krishna's lotus feet. So trying to see Krishna's plan, remembering the Lord's lotus feet, remembering the instructions, just like when Arjuna, he was dismayed at Krishna's leaving, but then he pacified his mind by remembering his instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. I was also somewhat pacified the other night, dealing with some of my own issues, to read of Yudhisthira, and he was speaking about virtue. I mean, I was feeling so inspired how he kind of was glorifying virtue and dharma. I mean, wonderful stuff. And even he, it was interesting, because we can actually sometimes have difficulty dealing with our own shortcomings. But he also made a mistake in the gambling match. So I was somewhat encouraged to feel, well, even he's having to deal with some of his own, at least apparent, shortcomings. So another way of actually seeing how these great souls, another example is Srila Prabhupada, forbearance. For your interest, if you go onto ISKCON News, you will see a link to a site, Newsweek, American magazine. It's a bit like Time, I guess, is it? Time, Newsweek. They've got some interesting sections and all kinds of interesting things. They had one section on the 15 biggest deceivers or cheats in the world. People who've set themselves, who've imposters, people who've claimed to be other people. You know, you get these people claiming to be a Rothschild son or a Ford. Not that kind of Ford, another kind of Ford. And they pretend to be that kind of person. And they get away with it, some of them. But there's an interesting section on late developers. Those who've actually achieved something late in life. And there's one lady who actually had no, she was unknown until she was 76. And she died when she was 101, became a famous artist. After 76 she started. So we have too many excuses. One of the biggest excuses is, there are many excuses, and this is important. Nanu shochanti panditaha. We have good excuses, don't we? Pragyavadang shivasase. We have very excuses why I should lament. I mean, look at what ISKCON has done. My moon is in Scorpio. What can I do? Or I'm too old. Sometimes we go, oh, I'm too old now. Illusion. Maya. Always some excuse. So Srila Prabhupada is cited as number 5 in the list of 15 late developers. Go and look at it. So he's being recognized for that. If you go to ISKCON News, which is Anutama's site, you'll find it there. And then there's a link to Newsweek. Imagine what Srila Prabhupada, and it wasn't all easy. Again, we can say it was all Leela. But actually, when Srila Prabhupada was gored by the bull, he was actually, I think he explains, I was lying there and I was thinking, have I done the right thing? Even when he came to America, he was looking at the times of the ships to go back, thinking, he was considering. The pure devotee, he's in touch with the super soul, but is not the super soul. So he also has to undergo these tributes, but just see what Krishna gave him in the end. Therefore this forbearance is so important, to somehow or other persevere. Whatever happens, I will carry on. Whatever happens externally, and whatever is my own shortcomings, which some of us feel may be many, still, what other solution is there? We have to carry on. Actually, there is no other solution, because if we give up, we're going to have to come back again to face the same obstacle. Isn't it true? Just like in horse jumping, if you find that one barrier is too high, you can't kind of go around it. You fail once and they give you another chance to go over. So similarly, the hurdles, we have to go over those hurdles. But hurdles are interesting, aren't they? You know what that you know what hurdles are? You have this running. Because to get over hurdles, you have to go forward and upward. So our mission must be to go forward and upward. And that the hurdles are really opportunities for us to do that. The challenges in life. Therefore, Queen Kunti is another example who she welcomed challenges. So there are many different ways, and we could explore them more. How do we deal with that suffering that comes to us as devotees? Thank you. I'll finish there. Questions, or please share your own realizations on this subject, which is very pertinent to us. Mother Jayabhadra. Yeah, I wasn't putting down philosophy completely, but the path of philosophy without Krishna consciousness is, of course, very closely linked to Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is really that deep philosophical search, not just prajna, internal knowledge also. It's not just academic, but it's a deep search for the truth. That's fine, but it must be connected to Krishna. Otherwise, it becomes the natural tendency is to try and reject this world and to embrace that path, which is simply another cause of suffering, according Klesho Dikatarastesham Avyakta Shakti Chetasam. It's another cause of suffering, you see. And actually, those of us always who've tried to renounce and trying to give up desires and trying to fight will know sometimes the futility of that struggle. Because we have to try and give, we do have some struggle, but unless we actually start to develop that real Krishna consciousness, what use is such a struggle? Does that explain a little bit? One needs to be full of, oh thoughtful man, relish Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh thoughtful man. Other advice on dealing with the whips and scorns of outrageous fortune? Oh. Yeah, this is a good point. Thank you. You look at something, you see it in a different light. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's useful. We should know I'm not going to be here forever. You know, I've got experience in the past that I went through it, and I can go through it again. And I know that Krishna had a plan in the past, therefore I'm convinced he has a plan now. Yeah. We have to, see that long-term vision is very important. Those with the vision of eternity, that's mentioned in the Gita. Actually, I think Winston Churchill had a nice aphorism. It's kind of got a bit of a double meaning. It's a bit weird. If you find yourself going through hell, keep going. Going through hell, keep going. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shishirad Gopinath ki jai. Hari.